RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you have discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. Josh, why don't you tell us what we are getting into this week? It seems like we're going to go a little deeper into this show here.
We're going to travel a little bit.
Good. I love travel episodes.
Yep, because Season 3, Episode 3, we are going to Corto Maltese. Sorry, my accent. I'm not ready to go. Clearly, I need to keep working on that a little bit. Corto Maltese is the name of the episode, and it aired on October 22nd of 2014. Okay, this is going to be an interesting episode. Written by Eric Olison and Beth Schwartz, and directed by Steven Sergic. Steven Sergic. Is that a new name? Have we heard that one before?
I don't remember seeing that. I forgot to look up if he had done anything else, but I don't recall that one before. He may be new to the team.
Maybe he lives in Corto Maltese and he was available to direct this one.
Oh, yeah, that's possible.
Could be. All right. Well, sun, sand, and espionage awaits Oliver, Diggle, and Roy in Corto Maltese, where they're going to try to convince Thea to return to Starling City. But, of course, Malcolm remains in the shadows to make sure everything happens exactly the way he wants it, as he continues with Thea in his version of the slap water warrior training, which he actually calls burn your hand over the water and you better not slap it, you big wussy. Oh, and also punch face. now, back in Starling City, Felicity starts her new job with Ray Palmer, and she's putting her skills to work to repair something that she may have actually had a hand in destroying. Laurel is still really struggling with her sister Sarah's death when she hears this story of another member of her AA group and this lady's abusive boyfriend. She thinks maybe she'll be able to take on the canary mantle and go after this creep herself. Well, the best laid plans of canaries and men do not always go as planned. So after she gets her tail feathers handed to her, she seeks out some training, which may be more difficult to come by than she thought. Now, back in Corto Maltese, Diggle has to stop a mercenary who has information that will put Lila in danger. And then, of course, Roy, he tries to convince Thea to come back by taking out some trash. Okay, well, he doesn't really try that hard. Actually, I didn't think. But it does seem to work because Malcolm gives in and he tells her to go. So, you know, everybody's back now. Maybe things will start to settle down for our team now that, hi, Nyssa.
You know, when you were describing the warrior training there, the thing that occurred to me was there was an old comedy routine from a Canadian group called the Frantics, and it was called Boot to the Head.
Oh, I remember that. The Will. They were reading The Will, right?
They were reading The Will, yes.
And everybody would get a boot to the head.
Boot to the head. There's another one that I think The Will was the second one. The first one was, Master, how do we do this training? And it's like, you cannot continue to ask me such questions, boot to the head, and things like that. So,
very cool.
Well, there's a lot of, besides just the training montages that we got, there's a lot of really interesting stuff that's going on this episode. There was I felt we got some more information. I've got a crazy theory. But first, there's not a lot of news, but I did want to remind everybody that next week, this is shocking. Next week is the show's 50th episode.
Whoa.
Can you believe we'll have done a little bit less, because I think we doubled up in the first season a little bit to try to catch up. But we've almost done 50 hours of this show.
Wow. Well, you know, if you put in our summer specials there, I bet you we're pretty close.
That is true. Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
Anyway, it's going to be called The Magician. So I think Oliver's having a big birthday party to celebrate. And he's getting, some entertainment brought over to the...
Now, is this... This isn't the tie-in with Flash, is it? Are they gonna, they're not going to have a Flash episode called The Bouncy House, are they?
the Bouncy... No, this is not the tie-in with Flash.
Okay.
Though this will probably be the episode where... in this episode, Felicity was like, hey, excuse me, see, I got to go visit my friend who was struck by lightning, and she walks off. And then she's going to walk into the next Flash episode, say, hey, everybody, and then at the end of Flash, she's going to leave, and then next issue or next episode of Arrow, she's going to walk back and say, hey, everybody, I'm back from visiting my friend who got struck by lightning. So, phew, she's a busy girl.
Well, we need that description in each episode so we know why she was off screen, but...
I think it works. I think it's going to be pretty cool.
I do too.
Okay, so first thing I want to do, just to kind of get this out of the way, is last episode we talked about the intro, which made an appearance. It wasn't in the first episode of the season. Oliver's normal, for 5 years I was on a hellish island reading. It's different this season, and I wasn't sure if it was the same as the intro that was written in the Flash, or excuse me, in the Arrow Season 2.5 digital comic, which is also now out in print, the first issue at least. It's very similar, but it's not exactly the same. In the comic, he says, "My name is Oliver Queen. After 5 years in hell, I returned home with only one goal, to save my city." And I think that's the same as it is in the show. But then he goes on, "And I did. That battle may be over, but there will be others. To protect my friends, my family, my home, I must continue to be someone else. I must be something else." So, again, very similar, but different enough that it's not the same.
Yeah. Yeah, and I because I didn't have the transcript of the TV show, in front of me there, my memory was saying that they did sound the same, so I was just thinking that they were the same. But
what he says in the second half of the TV show one, he says, "Now others have joined my crusade. To them, I am Oliver Queen, but to the rest of Starling City, I am someone else. I am something else." Previously on Arrow. So that's what they do there.
Yeah, well, so, and we talked about that last week, how that is clearly going to be an ongoing theme in this series, which this season, which it even was in this one too.
Right. So, any action show like this, and maybe not even action shows, but shows like this need to have a kind of a seasonal arc, right? That's something that the whole season is about. I mean, and that's what we've seen so far. The first one was about the Undertaking. The second season was about Slade's revenge on Oliver, right? And the Undertaking Part 2, you know, what he's going to do. But we had a main villain that was identified relatively early on in the seasons, right? So who was the villain for season one?
Are you asking me who the villain was for season one?
Yeah.
Malcolm Merlyn.
Okay, right. And then for season two, it was
Slade Wilson.
Okay. And for season three, it's who is it? We don't know yet.
No, we don't know.
Right? Okay. So here's my crazy theory. I've got an idea of, and you know, it's kind of going back to the Joss Whedon school of TV. He always called it the Big Bad. That's the main villain that is kind of pulling the strings throughout the entire season, whether you know it or not. Now, some people might say, well, we've heard who this guy is going to be. He's going to show up in a few episodes. Ra's al Ghul. Possibly, but I think that, like we've talked about, the way the writers present stuff to us that seems very obvious.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to go that route. That's the easy route. I'm going to take us down the hard route, okay?
Okay. Or route. I'm agreeing with you that maybe Ra's al Ghul's a little too obvious. No motivation there to me, but... I'm not sure I've traveled down this hard route, so hold my hand as we go.
Okay. I'm pretty sure it's Plastic Man, but I'm not certain. So, okay. No, I'm just kidding about that. All right.
Let go of my hand.
Stop touching me. Okay. So, as I was watching the episode, you know, there was some really cool stuff going on, but, you know, there was different thematic things going on. You had the whole piece, which it felt like a flashback because we were in Corto Maltese, but it was actually the main thrust of the episode. We had this whole thing with Mark Shaw trying to get away from Argus, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the episode, Ray Palmer recovers, Felicity has recovered some plans off the hard drive that was damaged, that you mentioned in the little reading at the beginning. And they're Queen Consolidated plans. So these are Oliver's plans for something called OMAC. And I will talk about that in the little reference section at the end.
Okay, I want to come back to something you said later, so keep going.
Okay, yeah, make a note so we can get back to it.
Okay.
So Oliver has these plans for this OMAC thing of the Argus drone that was used to potentially blow him up. I believe it was the Suicide Squad episode. And also the missile systems and the missile truck from Lian Yu. And the truck actually looks kind of like the Hiss tank from G.I. Joe, but I'll digress. If you want to see those pictures, they're posted on our episode screen caps on Facebook. We have an album of different, you know, interesting screen caps that we've taken from the episode. Okay, so Ray Palmer now has these as the head of Queen Consolidated, and he was very interested to get these off of the Applied Sciences hard drive that was destroyed last season. He's very interested to get his hands on these. So then that's happening. Oliver obviously knew about these weapons and probably bought the plans for them or something along those lines when he came back from Lian Yu, because these were the weapons that were used in the first season that Fires was using to try to shoot down some commercial airliner that was going over. Now, there was someone that was telling him what to do. He was not working on his own. Now, I think we had always made the assumption that that was Malcolm Merlyn, because he was the bad guy in the first season, but we were in flashbacks at that time. Okay? Mm-hmm. You with me so far here?
Yeah, so far.
Okay. Then, in the previous podcast for this season, we were discussing why would Amanda Waller grab Oliver from the island and take him to Hong Kong? What purpose, like, does she want with him? What is it she thinks that he has? You know, because I think it's because he knew about Fires and the weapons on Lian Yu. I think that Waller, because she likes to use people in the same way that Shaw wanted to get out from under her thumb, you know, he just wants someone to say that he's dead so he can live a free life because, quote, you don't know what she can make you do. I think she was controlling Fires. I think Oliver took out Fires, and so she sees value in Oliver to be part of her group, whether it's Argus or whatever else she's running at the time in Hong Kong. Like, if he can take out Fires, he's obviously got some skills. And now I believe that she has got some screws in with Ray Palmer, and that's why we are getting the vibe that he's doing something weird or illegal or evil, because she is actually pulling the strings in the present as well as in the Hong Kong pieces, and I feel that she is the big bad for the season. Thoughts? Questions?
Okay, so Amanda Waller is Plastic Man. Is that...
Okay, no, you were not paying attention.
What was
the middle
thing?
Okay, let me start over again. Okay, so Oliver has these... No.
Okay, no, wait, no. Okay, so Amanda Waller is the big... Ooh, interesting. That is not where I thought you were going with that. I like that.
See, I didn't want to put that in the notes because I didn't want you to read ahead.
and yes. Oh, I never read ahead. It's okay.
Okay.
So, no, that I like that idea, and it really fits, especially with what he was saying, you know, that Amanda Waller can make you do whatever. Anyway, so... Interesting. Now, a couple things.
Sure.
And you kind of answered this question as you talked and explained this to me. We're kind of assuming that those were Oliver's plans in that database.
We are
on that hard drive.
They do have the Queen Consolidated logo on them.
Well, no, okay. We're assuming they're Oliver's.
Oh, I see. Oh, see what you're saying. Okay, gotcha.
Okay, I mean, maybe Moira had something to do with it. These were plans from previous. Now, your theory and your line of thought makes sense because Oliver was on the island, so I mean, he would have access to those things. But that is an assumption, and you have to consider that that was an assumption that they belonged to Oliver.
That's interesting. I mean, because Moira, obviously, you know, with the whatever she was doing with Malcolm and the Undertaking Group, she had her hands in all sorts of things as well. We might find out that she was involved with Waller as well. You know, because obviously, you know, you're thinking that these characters don't interact with each other, but there may be a wider tapestry than what we're actually seeing. Now, the one thing that I considered, and I didn't bring up because I was thinking, could Waller have been the one that shot Sarah with the arrows? And then I said, no, that's I still think that's somebody else. But I want people to know that I was thinking about that as well.
Yeah, that hadn't occurred to me, and I agree with you, though. I don't think it was her.
Okay.
Now, then the other thing that I wanted to say after all that, now, and this again, and maybe unless I'm missing something, this is another assumption, is that Ray Palmer knew what was on that hard drive, or that when he saw it, he was, and see, I couldn't exactly figure out his reaction there.
It's hard to read him, isn't
yeah,
it?
Which is good. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's good. It gives us some stuff to speculate. But, you know, was he shocked and surprised, or was he like, yes, this is what I was looking for? It could have gone either way. So,
I felt it was the latter, but I guess there's room for different interpretations on that.
Yeah, of course, and that's. But I really
you mean,
like your thought process there. That's interesting. And man, yeah, you've put Amanda Waller at the top of my list for villains of the season.
And you know, villain might be too strong a term. I mean, I like the big bad because she's the one that will be pulling the strings for everybody. You know, kind of controlling where the characters go. We haven't seen her. We haven't seen her. We only saw her at the season finale from last year. So we haven't actually seen her yet. But her presence has been very strong in the Hong Kong flashbacks. And then especially this episode because Shaw, you know, really, really, really dislikes her.
Yeah, you think?
Just a skosh.
Yeah. I like that. I like that. Man, I'm going to have to start putting the, you know, next episode's puzzle pieces into that puzzle that you're fitting in my head now and see if we can add anything to it.
Well, you know what's going to happen at the beginning of next episode? It's going to open with a shot of Amanda Waller going, oh, my plans are coming together just as, and then she's going to explain everything and we're going to go, oh, well, okay, that was easy.
No, I think everybody will say, oh, Jay was the only one that thought of that.
I'm sure there are other people that have followed this line of thought, but it's one of those things, you know, you're watching the episode and like when I first watch it, I'm just trying to pay attention to what's going on. And then I think about it for a day and then I watch it again. And, you know, it's like one of those things, you know, you're kind of thinking about it throughout the day and, or as you're going to sleep the night that you watch the episode and just things start percolating and you're like, well, that's why do they show this? Why are they doing it that way? Why do they keep referencing these things? And so, I don't know. I mean, I'm just kind of stringing things together. It feels potentially right, but that, you know, it may or may not be, but we'll see.
Yeah, that we'll keep watching. We'll keep watching. She's definitely not a friendly person.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't consider her like a favor friend.
Oh no, she is not a favor friend. I don't think she's a friend at all. So, was there something else that you wanted to mention in that genre of discussion?
Well, that was the Ray Palmer's reaction. That was the other one.
Oh, okay. So, speaking of Ray Palmer, Felicity goes to work for him, very much like Working Girl. Except he's kind of the Harrison Ford character, I guess, and she's the Melanie Griffith character. We have this whole awkward exchange. They never seem to know what either one's talking about. It's very stream of consciousness discussions between the two of them, I think. Because Ray is really never sure what Felicity's thinking. He's going a mile a minute, and she's a little scattered as well. It's comical, but it also it's a little weird. I'm not sure what to think about all that yet. But anyway, we were discussing on last week's episode, or I was bringing up at least, that she, Felicity, had gone to work for Ray Palmer because she said she needed more out of life. And this was after she had had arguments with Oliver about the way that people were, you know, that she and Oliver were grieving about Sarah's death and his lack of grief and stuff like apparent grief. And I felt like she had left Team Arrow. But then I also said, I had said that maybe I interpreted it as she just kind of left. And I wasn't sure if she left because she was mad at Oliver or if maybe he was sending her back to kind of work as a, you know, work undercover. And then this episode starts with her back at the Arrow Cave, you know, doing work with him, trying to get these fingerprints and stuff like that. And then she's like, oh, I got to go to work. So was there something that I missed why is she working for Ray Palmer? I mean, I guess she just needs money instead of working at the tech place, whatever it was called.
Well, why she's working with Ray Palmer, I think, is just it just started to feel like the right decision for her. You know, I mean, it's just a better job. And clearly this guy was trying, you know, we talked last week about he was kind of trying to reach out to her by being a little bit nicer and understanding about her troubles. Where I think it threw us off is that line that she said to Oliver as she was kind of storming out. Like, I can't remember exactly what the line was, but it's, I'm not going to do that or something. I think that was the line that threw us off because it sounded like she was leaving.
Yeah. I mean, it was like she was huffy and taking off, basically.
Yeah, like she was mad and not going to do this. They were going to have to convince her to come back and help them, but they didn't. They just called her again. Matter of fact, they called her a lot, and now she's working harder than ever. But
yeah, it's you only appreciate people when they're gone, you know. That's how it works. So, So I just didn't understand, but I mean, it does give it provides the potential. Like I'm thinking for, you know, Oliver to have this kind of in at his old company, and you know, who knows what's going on. I mean, she's again, by virtue of her, I feel like she's kind of blinded to the way Ray Palmer works her. Because he came in to the store, you know, the other episode and was like, hey, I'm looking to do this backlog, whatever, majigger. And she's like, oh, you don't want to use that. You want to use this. And here's a tool you can use for my website and hack away. And that basically has him hacking into Queen Consolidated computers. Same kind of thing on this one where he's like, you know how many of my techs, you know, set or, you know, were able to get anything off of this hard drive? None of them. And you did this. And, you know, he's being really complimentary, but he's basically like, you know, nobody's been able to do this. I'd like you to give it a try. And he really butters her up. And then, boom, you know, she gets whatever off there. She's not even, like, obviously she didn't even pay attention to it. And then now he's got these blueprints that, you know, what's this all about? I don't know. It's an interesting dynamic, but I feel like she's really being used by Palmer in this relationship. So
it's almost like she's distracted by all the other stuff that's happening to her that she's not paying attention to Ray about, you know, like what's going on around Ray.
Yeah.
She's actually given him quite a bit of information there when she's talking to Diggle and, or I guess it was Oliver and Laurel. And it was interesting. I still really like Felicity and the character, but sometimes maybe it's not the right fit for where they're trying to go or maybe it is, maybe it's going to take us on some, creative story ideas.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously there's a lot of stuff going on with Ray Palmer that we just don't know what's going on. This gets really confusing here. We got Ray and Roy. So
you can call him Ray, or you can call him Roy.
But just don't call him late for dinner.
Yes.
Well, so a great quote from Diggle in this episode, when at the beginning, when Felicity finds or reveals to Oliver that she's Thea has not been in Italy, she's been on Corto Maltese, name of the episode, which I think that we've just exhausted our references for that. He says, "What is it with your family and islands?" And Oliver kind of gives him a wry look. So we find out that Thea's been hiding on this South American island of Corto Maltese. Now, there's some really interesting dynamics going on here because, of course, Roy and Oliver go to talk to Thea, but then Lila suggests to Dig that he should tag along because, well, you know, this guy hasn't checked in and Waller wants, you know, wants just, or no, I guess Waller didn't want him checked out, but Lila wanted to know what was going on before Waller got suspicious, I guess, I think was what was said there. I can't remember specifically, but anyway, right. Lila told Diggle that he should go.
Yeah.
Basically gave him permission to leave again.
She's trying to get this taken care of before Waller gets involved.
Right. Which, again, I feel like there's, you know, Lila also seems to be kind of on a short leash because at the end of the episode, she gets called in by Waller as well. Waller really, I mean, she does have her hands in a lot of different things.
Yeah.
You know, it's very similar to Nick Fury, I guess.
Similar, but it feels wrong. It just feels wrong. Yeah.
There is a different dynamic, I think, with the way things are going. So we find out that, as you mentioned at the beginning, Thea has been training with Malcolm Merlyn, her biological father, for the past 6 months on this island since she left Starling City. Now, here's an interesting thing that I noticed. When Oliver goes to the house, right, Malcolm is, like, right behind the door with his bow drawn so that if Oliver were to try to come in, he would have been taken out. But Thea's not there at that time. We then see Malcolm come around the corner after Thea has talked to Roy, but neither she nor Roy see Malcolm at that point. So Malcolm also never lets Thea know that he knows that Oliver and Roy have been talking to her. And then at the end of the episode, when they, quote, fight to see if she can go back, she asks kind of half-heartedly, because I think we all know the answer. She's like, "Did you let me win?" So my question to you, Josh, is, does Malcolm really want her to go back? And if so, why?
Yeah, he clearly just let her go. He didn't have to. He could have made her stay. I don't know. I think he does want her to go back. I'm not sure why. But I started questioning whether or not he told her everything about Oliver. Because it felt like she didn't know about him being the Arrow.
I don't think he told her that stuff.
It doesn't. Although, then I got to thinking, because she does seem different. And, you know, at the end when she gets her hand burned and doesn't even flinch,
right.
You know, Oliver's already ready to punch her in the arm. Two for flinching, but he couldn't. It almost seems, I mean, she's clearly different. He's trained her. So I don't know. Maybe she's kind of putting on this act with Oliver that she doesn't know as much as she actually does. But I'm just kind of speculating on that. I do think Malcolm wants her to go back. I think he had the intention of both of them going back to Starling City.
Well, he says he'll see her soon.
Yeah.
So that means, like, she's going back and then he's going to follow her. But it seems weird. Why would he want to go back? Because at the beginning of the episode, she was saying, kind of taunting, you know, if the police knew you were here, it would be big trouble. Or if the Arrow knew, you know, it'd be big trouble. And he's like, well, it'd be big trouble for all of us. I don't know what his
endgame is. Well, I think he has some plans. I think he had some plans all along for Thea. Not sure what they are, especially now that, you know, Moira's gone, and I don't know what other business he would have with Oliver. So maybe it's something else. Maybe it's somebody else. Maybe Ra's al Ghul or something. But
I don't know. No, I think he wants some revenge on Oliver personally. I mean, I think.
I don't know. It doesn't feel like that's how he's behaving. And even when he came back to Starling City last year, and he was just, you know, kind of hanging out with Moira, doing, you know, Mexican soap operas, they didn't. Oliver didn't even come up. He just wanted Thea.
So I
don't know. I think he really just wanted to take her until she was trained enough, and he knew that she would eventually go back. So now I'm kind of thinking, yeah, he probably didn't tell her all of Oliver's secrets, which means he was lying to her too. She's going to be mad about that. There's just poor Thea. She just can't win.
And my thought, just going back to did he tell her about Oliver being the Arrow? I mean, I don't know how good an actor Thea is, not the actress herself, but like Thea as a character. Because when Oliver was, it doesn't necessarily mean she was told everything, but when Oliver was talking about
Robert.
His dad,
yeah,
about Robert. And that whole story, I mean, she was like, she was really shocked. I mean, that was a lovely scene between the two of them.
Yeah, that was good. And, yeah, I don't know. And even if she did know some detail, I don't know that anybody knew about that part of Robert, that he killed himself. I mean, only Oliver knew that. He's the only one that was there that's still alive.
Right, right. I don't think he had mentioned that to his mom.
I don't think so either.
Might have, but. That was 2 years ago.
Well, she's not around any either, so. And she wouldn't have told Malcolm.
Right, right.
So Thea didn't know that. But I don't know. I'm not really feeling like she knows about Oliver's secret unless that kind of plays into some plan that Malcolm has.
Right. Well, I did also want to bring up that it seemed like the majority of scenes that we got between Oliver and Thea were primarily photographed in close-up, especially the last sequence where Oliver was talking about Robert. I mean, that entire scene, I think it starts with a wide shot, and then we kind of cut in. But it's pretty much full face on both characters for the entirety of the scene. And then when they get up to leave, it, you know, it pulls back a little bit. But it was a very... It was a very emotionally strong sequence, and it was also very intimate just by the use of the close-up, which I thought was very interesting because a lot of the rest of the show was not that, but some of these interactions between Oliver and Thea where he's trying not to lie, he's trying to actually get closer to his sister, and the director brings us into that by you know, making a full-frame close-up.
Yeah, good scene, very well acted. Even the close up. I think the lighting was kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, muted or something. You know, softer.
Yeah.
In a lot of the Corto Maltese scenes were like that, but that one with them especially, I felt. It surprised me. I did not expect their relationship to be where it was at the end of this episode like this. I thought they were going to go in a totally different direction.
Oh, what, you thought they were just going to, she was going to stay or something?
I didn't necessarily think she'd stay, but I thought it would be a more aggressive relationship. I mean, where she was still showing her anger openly towards him.
She didn't really seem to be angry even at the beginning of the episode. It seemed like she had, I mean, whether it was from her training or just being away for 6 months, the fire within her that was really burning at the end of last season mm-hmm. had calmed down a little bit.
Well, and with Roy too.
Right. Yeah. And what I liked too was that Roy didn't push it. He's like, I'd like you to come back. And she's like, no. And she's like, okay, well, you know, it's good seeing you again. You know, yeah. It was just like,
you've really mellow this season.
He's so tired from training and because he's not sleeping.
Something's going on with Roy. Something's going on, I think, is building up. That's going to.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, I think they're going to have a Roy-centric episode here sometime before the winter break and kind of explain exactly what's going on. I think he's a pressure cooker, man. I think he's going to blow something.
Interesting. I had not thought about that, but
well, he just hadn't done. I mean, he's helped. He's got a killer new costume.
Yeah,
and he helped a lot with Count Vertigo. But
he helped
even
a lot
then,
this
as a character,
too.
He was just kind of he was nothing much is going on with him.
He was really kicking butt in this one. I mean, he took out like three or four guards at one point, and you know, he's got his arrow skills down, his bow skills, so.
His bow skills from pieces of hotel room.
That was very clever.
I like that.
Because you had that joke at the beginning where he's like, Oliver says, what are you doing? He's like, I'm going with you because I need to fix this. And he's like, no, what are you doing? Because you can't travel with that. It's like, oh, right, okay. Nice little misdirection there. I want to go back to some of Thea's training here for just one second. The key training moment, I think, and the key piece of dialogue from Malcolm's instruction is that pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. And I think that may go back to what we were just talking about with Thea and her place with Oliver and Roy. So the pain that she felt is inevitable, right? Everybody will feel pain at some point in their life, physical, emotional. You know, being alive is pain, right? But you can choose to suffer or not. And it's looking through that and overcoming that. And I feel like if she got anything out of the training that he was doing, and obviously she's gotten some physical skills from it, she also got this whole thing that she will feel pain, but she doesn't have to suffer. And it's all within her control. And it's not anybody else's decision. So, and, you know, I think we see that. But we also see that, I mean, you can look at Oliver. You can look at Sarah. You can look at Laurel. I mean, Roy. Probably any of the characters here. Everybody's felt pain. And a lot of them are feeling pain currently. I mean, this really speaks to Laurel's journey in the last two episodes, well, two and a half episodes here, I guess.
Yeah, well, I would say that all of those characters, Oliver, Sarah, Laurel, all of those characters were suffering, and that's kind of what made them who they are, who they'll ultimately become, like in Laurel's case, I guess, that they continued to suffer. I would say that Oliver suffered a lot during the first season as he got over the experiences from the not just the island, but the five hellish years.
Right.
And then he continued that last season. Now I think he's suffering a little bit trying to figure out who he is. So, you see the difference between those heroes that compensate their suffering by doing the heroic acts. You know, that's kind of what Laurel was doing when she went out and, you know, tried to beat that guy up. but you see in the villains, they don't always suffer. Like, you don't see Malcolm suffering in any of the seasons that he's been on. I shouldn't say that. He was suffering when his wife died. That pushed him to learn how to not suffer instead just.
Right. Well, he went to get the training.
Right.
I would argue that he suffered when he died, or appeared to die. I mean, he had to bow out of his plan. But yeah, again, we haven't necessarily seen that. That is a
He didn't act like he suffered, though. I mean, at least what we saw, he didn't act like he suffered.
And if that's his mantra or his philosophy, he may not have. I don't know. I could probably argue that Slade has suffered.
I agree with that.
Now, on the island, right, because, I mean, he had to, the pain that he felt when Shadow died. I mean, man, it's, you know, he's been grieving. Well, he was grieving for 5 years there, basically 4.5 years. So
yeah, no, you're right about that. So, but I think that the suffering is kind of what keeps them going, what keeps them continuing to be the heroes. Except, you know, I would say maybe not Diggle, at least right now, which maybe doesn't bode too well for the future.
He seems to be in a really good place, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, which is never good if you're a hero. And he was suffering there for a while because he wanted revenge for his brother. Mm-hmm. But he's kind of gotten over that. But also, he hasn't had much happen to him personally, so that's what worries me.
Speaking of Laurel, though, she talks about the fire burning in her belly that can't be quenched by drink or something else, she said. But when she went out and fought, even though she was getting the crap kicked out of her, it went away, which, you know, that's a little dangerous, I think, obviously, because, you know, it's like thrill seekers, I guess. You don't want to become an adrenaline junkie or anything like that.
It is. You know, it's like alcoholism. You know, you're drowning in something that's very bad for you.
Yeah.
Because it helps you escape other bad feelings.
And it may be, there may be some sort of actual rush, you know, that comes from it, an endorphin or adrenaline rush of some kind. But we've talked a lot about Laurel on the show, and I want to kind of take the rest of the show here to continue to talk about her, mostly because this episode, after reading some things that were posted on our Facebook page and just things that we've talked about, you know, I was down on Laurel. I didn't think she was the best character, but this episode, you know, it's taken me and it's turned me another, you know, 90 degrees back from where I was. There's so much potential that they put in here. I mean, I wish we had been getting some of these tidbits all season.
Right.
I mean, I know we're only in the third episode, but I mean, she really moved through a number of elements here, from the AA meeting, deciding that she wants to, you know, take the matters into her own hands, actually dressing up, going out, trying to beat up this guy, then getting the crap kicked out of her, and then going back and asking Oliver to train her. And not really surprisingly, he says no, because it's like anything else. Like he, you know, like you're saying, it can be just as dangerous as an addiction as like alcoholism or something like that. He doesn't want to be an enabler for that. And then she goes to see Ted Grant. No, the other Ted Grant, Wildcat, and get trained from him. So it's like, okay, so wow, all of a sudden we've kind of kickstarted Laurel's arc here, and we're back on the upswing.
Well, now I want to point out that we did discuss how, in order to get her where we thought they were sending her, she is going to have to suffer a little bit. She's going to have to feel the pain and the you know, agony that Oliver and Sarah did as they went through their 5 years. And it looks like, you know, they're kind of doing that. So I think we were on the right track for that. And part of our reasoning was more of how they were writing the character. But I really did like these insights that you're about to share.
Yeah. Yeah. So first off, I also thought it was good that Laurel's motivation for stepping out is, you know, to right wrongs against these defenseless women that are getting beat up by their drunkard husbands. That is a trait that Black Canary has had in the comic books for quite a while, which I thought was really interesting. But after last week's episode where we were talking about Laurel, we got a post on our Facebook page from a listener, Brandon, and he posted something from moviepilot.com called Arrow, A Defense of Laurel Lance. And it's basically a little, you know, write-up here about where she's been and what she's doing, and The fan reaction about people hating the character, also fan reaction to Katie Cassidy, which I'm really disheartened to hear that people, you know, would hate a character on a TV show so much that they would actually threaten the actor portraying that character. That just kind of turns my stomach.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
But, you know, so anyway, Brandon sent over this information about Laurel and the fact that, you know, he is a huge fan of the character and what they're doing, and believes that, you know, based on his own thoughts and a Defense of Laurel article, that the writers, you know, are purposely doing these things, you know, kind of like what you and I discussed. He also goes on to point out that, you know, the things that are happening to her that, you know, are, what do I want to say? It's like a counterpoint with Felicity. So the writers are writing both Felicity and Laurel. So we know that they can write female characters that fans react to positively. And he actually goes on to state that he really doesn't like Felicity very much, because he feels that she's being pushed, you know, like fans reacted positively to her. So they're continuing to push this character that may be overstepping her bounds. I don't know, but I do like the idea of thinking of the writers making the two female characters counterpoints. We're going to write this character so that everybody likes her. We're going to write this character so that everybody hates her. And that, you know, he says that the writers make Felicity like a saint and nothing bad happens to her. And then, you know, they write Laurel so that she, you know, goes drinking. She gets in a love triangle. She dates Brother Blood. You know, these weird, irrational things, and nothing irrational or selfish happens with Felicity. And then we had another person post, Ryan, and he actually was agreeing with our assessment of Laurel. He thought that he couldn't figure out the way that, you know, why she was being written that way. And he says, I don't think I can buy her as a Black Canary, no matter how much angst they write into the show for her. Maybe it's the actress that can't sell it, but the writing hasn't done her any favors either. I'd be interested to hear people's thoughts now after seeing Laurel, you know, kind of step up into that trying to be a hero role, but she's, you know, failing. I mean, it's like the first time Oliver tried to shoot an arrow. There's a lot of similarities, I guess, to the role that we're seeing. She's gone to find someone to train her, and you know, it's in an unlikely place.
Yeah,
and there's some interesting stuff going on. I'm heartened by what they've done with this, and I think we have turned a corner with this character finally, and I hope they can continue on with this.
I agree with you, and I agree with both of the assessments of both Ryan and Brandon. I think maybe I can't show the dislike for Felicity, although I do think they have been focusing a lot on her. She's a likable character, but doesn't mean I want her less.
Yeah, I mean, it could be overkill. I mean, that, you know, and they are going to be having her a guest on Flash next week,
right?
So, and
maybe
just
she
put
won't
her
be
into...
on as much Arrow next week. Maybe I don't know.
Possibly, yeah.
But you know, it was the situations with Laurel, I feel, didn't connect as much as some of the other characters. I mean, connect with each other, you know, on a path that would kind of put her where we thought she was going. I agree with you, though. This episode turned me around a little bit on her, and I did like where it was going, and I bought it. You know, I bought it. They'll have to be careful of what her abilities are. I just can't see her being quite as good as Sarah for a long, long time. But that's actually a really good thing. It helps when the heroes and have faults and failures and weaknesses that they can grow from. And I think eventually what's going to happen is or what's going to have to happen, you know, is Oliver's going to have to come to terms with the fact that Laurel is going to do this whether he likes it or not.
Yeah.
And from then, he has a decision to make. Do I stand by her and be there for her if she needs me, or do I just keep refusing and let, you know, just have her go off on her own and I won't be there, which, you know, he won't do that. So,
right, right.
But hey, that is what Oliver Queen and Laurel Lance do. They have this sort of weird relationship. It's their history throughout the comics and other places. You know, they were sort of destined to be together, but it's not always the easiest thing. So This might lead it down the trail. Good, you know, just good comments. I love hearing people's thoughts and ideas on where they think the show is going. It might not be the same as me, but that's totally okay. I love hearing about it.
Yeah. And another thing, I think it was actually in the article that Brandon shared with us, they mentioned that, of course, Sarah was not Black Canary. She was actually just, she went by The Canary or Canary.
True.
And that Black Canary would be a different character. And as I started to think about it from this episode, I can really see that since Sarah was, she was a trained assassin, and now that is not what the Black Canary character is in the comics. She, you know, she has a different motivation. Now, obviously, we've got to get the training going, but I like that, like I said, we get to see what the motivation is for what pushes us, Laurel to go out there. And it's that, you know, there's a character that can't really take care of herself, so Laurel wants to protect other people. I think, you know, she's going to be that, she's going to end up being kind of a motherly character on the show, but of course you can't just turn a character into that overnight, because then people will say, well, that's just lazy writing because they haven't built that up. I think if this continues and we see Laurel, you know, even if she gets a costume by the end of the season and, you know, maybe, you know, takes on the moniker of Black Canary or something like that, I think it'll be accepted because, well, I mean, they've really worked her now for, you know, two and a half seasons to get her to this point. It almost seems overdue. And I think maybe that's what a lot of people have been reacting to. And, you know, also just that they are disliking the character, and then people may be having difficulty separating themselves from the character and the actress.
Yeah.
Which,
well,
I would caution.
Yeah, not just caution, but warn, don't do that. But I will say again, in closing, from my point of view, that I do have faith in the writers because they have not steered me wrong. This series is amazing to watch, and I may not like one particular episode or how one character was in some story arc. However, I look at this as one overall series or even one season, and looking at it all together, even last season when, there were some episodes we weren't real fond of Laurel, but looking at it as you know, all of those episodes together, it worked as a story. And the writers did a good job of making it go to a place that they wanted it to, and it was satisfying to me. So I can continue to look like that. You and I talk a lot about it because we break it down each week and really dig deep into it. And there may not be some specific things we like, but overall, I think it's going to be fine. I think Laurel will be great.
I think Laurel is being tested by Amanda Waller. No, I don't know. So, anyway.
Wait.
Yeah.
Laurel becomes Plastic Man.
Oh, I'm sorry I even brought him up in the first place.
Okay, well, you know, I'm just throwing it out there. It's just an idea.
Okay.
It's my theory. You have your wild theory. I've got mine.
Fine. There are a few references that I wanted to get. Let me just follow up by saying we love hearing from the fans of the show, of the podcast, and of Arrow. And if anybody out there has any other ideas or takes on the characters and situations we've talked about here, please feel free to, you know, shoot us an email or post on our Facebook wall, comment on things that you know, that we post up there. We love this kind of discussion. I think it helps build the community here for us, and it helps Josh and I understand what people who are listening to the show are interested in hearing about or talking about. Because obviously it's just the two of us, you know, talking, and these are the things that are interesting to us, but maybe you're having a different conversation with your friends or with your coworkers about the show. So, you know, let us know. In terms of the references for this week's episode, there were... I started off by going, oh, there weren't that many, but then as I started kind of coming up with stuff, I'm like, oh, yeah, they put a lot on here. Now, I didn't see a 52 in this episode. Did I miss that, or do you... Do you remember if there was a 52 mentioned?
I don't recall a 52 either. They had, where at the end, Diggle was carrying like 52 coffees at the airport, man. Just like, here's one for you, here's one for you. No, I didn't see a 52.
Going to get one for this old guy right here that looks a little shaky. So,
but none for Ray and Felicity, please.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, Ray had way too many. Okay, so the... I don't know if you picked up on this, but the buyer that was supposed to be meeting Shaw that sent the other men was Armitage.
Mm-hmm.
Did that name ring a bell with you at all? Did you
sounded very remember familiar, him? But I couldn't remember in the time that I had.
Yeah, I didn't remember specifically where he was. I did have to do a search for him, but I knew we had heard the name on the show before. He was the gentleman that Bronze Tiger brought in Tremors last season, in season two, who was trying to buy the Earthquake Machine.
Okay.
So, another interesting tidbit I found out when I was looking up Armitage, that there is a character in the comics called Milo Armitage, and he happens to be the stepfather of Connor Hawke. And those of you listening might remember... Connor Hawke is the, in the comics, is Oliver Queen's illegitimate son. So I don't necessarily think that bringing Armitage back in at this point is a coincidence. Though it could be a red herring.
Maybe. I don't know. Nothing they do is a coincidence.
Yeah, they don't just kind of do these kind of references by accident. So, I'm trying to remember how many times Team Arrow has actually been referenced on the show, but Lila calls the group that Diggle hangs out with Team Arrow, which might be the first time anybody outside of the core of Team Arrow, or maybe specifically Felicity, has called it Team Arrow, which is interesting because, of course, fans are calling it that, and I'm sure the writers and the directors and stuff like that call it that.
I'm still pushing for Oliver and Company. Nobody seems to like that one, though.
You want to use that meow? then we've got Mark Shaw, who is also known in the comics as Manhunter. The Manhunter character is sort of a spy, sort of a member of a secret organization that fights for the rights of people who can't fight for themselves and is about justice and stuff like that. I feel like this character did not really hold up the traits of the Manhunter character from the comic books, and he was just named Mark Shaw to kind of have a reference there, but who knows, there may be something that they will do with him some point in the future, so that could be interesting. Quarter Maltese originated in the graphic novel The Dark Knight Returns by Frank Miller, and it was a small South American country where that was on the news. We never actually went there, but I think Superman was doing something, and it was always in the news in the background of the comic. And then it made headlines, literally, in Batman, the 1989 Tim Burton film, because Vicki Vale was a photographer at a war in Quarter Maltese, and so there's her newspaper article was very famous for that. We had Ted Grant, who we mentioned, is also known as Wildcat. Now, in the comic books, Ted Grant's usually an older character in his 50s, probably. He's kind of grizzled. But he did train Black Canary at different points in her life, so that's really interesting. But, of course, this being the WB, you've got to have some kind of shirtless young dude there to to train her. there were also a number of the names of the people on the posters and for the in the boxing, what do you call it, gym, were different people that work on the show, like stunt coordinators or prop people or things like that. Also, the names in the Argus database that popped up, other than Lila, are also members of the production crew. So it's I think that's a cool
that
way to, yeah, that's a good way to give a shout out to people that, you know, might not normally, you know, get recognized. But, you know, it's, oh, look, there's my brother. He's in the Argus database. What's he do? Oh, he's the prop maker on the show or something like that. Thea uses the alias Mia while on Court of Maltese. And in the comic books, Mia Dearden is the sidekick of Green Arrow at one point. Thea's middle name is also Dearden. So there's another reference within that, but I don't think they mentioned that on the show. Felicity's assistant is named Jerry Conway, probably spelled with a J. I believe the subtitles had it. But Jerry, spelled with a G, Conway, is a comic book writer who has written such storylines as The Death of Gwen Stacy from the Amazing Spider-Man comics from the 70s. He also created the original character Felicity Smoke in the Firestorm comic, and is also one of the co-creators of the Punisher. So he's done he's done a ton of stuff. Those are some highlights.
It's a good name for Felicity's assistant.
I thought that was a really clever use of it, too. And we'll see how many more times he shows up. Maybe he'll become the Felicity Smoke of Queen Consolidated now. I don't know. At one point, Felicity is reading Iris West's blog called The Streak Lives, and that's how she finds out that Barry is out of the coma. Now, had we discussed this, does Felicity know that Barry's the Flash? I don't think we do we?
Well, we don't know for sure, but what we assume is that Oliver told her once Barry told Oliver.
Okay.
But...
jeez, everybody knows, man. This is horrible.
And if we're to assume that what's happening on Arrow is happening in real time on Flash, then he's been out of the coma for a while, and Oliver would have had time to tell her.
Right. And then finally, as I mentioned earlier on the blueprints, is the word OMAC, which in the DC Comics universe stands for One Man Army Corps. It was a... originally a kid named Buddy Blank who gets zapped by some kind of beam from a floating satellite called Brother Eye, E-Y-E, because it looks like a giant floating eye. And he gets turned into this super strong dude with a big black mohawk called OMAC, originally created by Jack Kirby in the 70s. In recent years, OMAC is not a friendly character. It is actually a series of robots created by Batman to protect parts of the world, but his satellite, Batman's satellite that controls all these, gains sentience and causes the OMACs to revolt and basically, you know, try to attack the superheroes and stuff like this. So, you know, oops.
That who just saw that coming? Happens.
Yep. And so, I don't know what kind of reference they mean for OMAC other than it's, you know, stands for One Man Army Corps. So we'll see what comes about that. I think that's all the references. There might have been a couple other minor little things, but like I said, that 52 was the thing I'm always looking for, and I didn't hear that or see that.
We'll have to go back and look for it again, yeah. But that's still, as always, a nice little list of references from this show.
So that's about all we've got for this week's episode of Green Justice. Hope you guys had a good time.
That's right. And if you did enjoy this episode, make sure you leave feedback for us on iTunes. We like seeing those good reviews. Also, you can contact us. You can send us an email, greenjustice@randomchatter.com. We're also on Twitter, @GreenJusticePod. Or like all of our friends, Ryan, Brandon, and some other people over there posting on Facebook. That's at facebook.com/GreenJusticePodcast.
You can also check out the other podcasts that Josh and I do, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, also available here at randomchatter.com. And all shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And of course, if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.